the ideas and discussions that have taken place today in this workshop. I have some introductions to make. First, I am Tom Worley, and my role is to serve as Chief of Staff at the Secretary of State's office, and it's a role I've had since January of 2007. In terms of our other members here serving as our workshop leaders, Bob Mangan, who is to my immediate left, he is the Chief Information Officer for the Secretary of State's office. He has served on the SOS IT team for over 20 years and has extensive experience in database development and management for the Secretary of State's office. Next to him is Ann Vitale. Ann serves as Associate Legal Counsel for the Ohio Department of Public Safety since May of 2008. The Department of Public Safety includes the Ohio Bureau of Motor Vehicles, which is the agency that conducts database searches for the Secretary of State's office and the County Board of Elections regarding initial registrants. Also on our panel today is David Farrell. He is the Deputy Assistant Secretary of State and Director of Elections for our office and has served in that capacity since January of 2007. He oversees elections and campaign finance sections as part of that responsibility, and he has served formally as the chair of the Clark County Board of Elections. Also on our panel is Matt Damschroeder. Matt serves as the Deputy Director of the Franklin County Board of Elections, and he's held that position since March of 2008. Previously, he had served 5 years as the Director of the Board of Elections for Franklin County. He also has been the past president of the Ohio Association of Election Officials and is a current trustee of that organization. At this point, I'm going to open up to any of our work group leaders to make some initial comments to give us a context as we begin this session on database. Thank you.
I'd like to start so that we have a good foundation and understanding of what we're talking about with the HAVA database. I'd like to give you a good understanding and foundation of what we're going to be talking about here in terms of how the HAVA database was developed. The HAVA database in its initial development cycles was developed from the bottom up. That is that the county BOEs, in their own request through the Secretary of State's office in the prior administration, requested local control of the database operations through themselves, the BOEs, and through their vendors who support them. It is truly just a repository. SOS does nothing to that database but accept data from the counties as they input it, pass it on to the BMV, SSA, et cetera, take the information returned to us, and then pass it back to the counties. In late 06, there were decisions made to change the amount of data that was forwarded to the counties. So we can make no changes in the databases without all parties agreeing to that change. Some of you may recall that in the summer conference of 07, a simple request was made to simply change the coded word for dead folks to read deceased, a better term, if you will. We couldn't even make that change because of how these databases are interrelated. The audit packets that go back between SOS and the counties are in a very strict format. If any change is made at any point, whether by the vendors or in county databases, the system will literally break at that point. So I just want it to be understood that this is a true repository where the Secretary of State does not make any changes. And in fact, the database has been built in such a way that, except on very rare occasions, no SOS employee can go in and make alterations in the data itself.
Can you hear me? Yes. Okay. I can speak to what the BMV's role is in the process. As Bob was saying, the information is just passed to the SOS and it's sent directly to BMV. We then run it through and attempt to make matches with what's on the voter registration with what we have in our BMV databases. If there are certain information that can't be matched in our databases, we send that back as well with the matches that we can, and from there, you know, that information is back at the Secretary of State to do with what she can. Information that we can't match in terms of Social Security numbers, we do forward to SSA, and they help somewhat with the verification process, and that is just passed back through BMV as a match or mismatch as well. So our role is pretty much just a matching and sending the information through.
Just to add a little more to that, in 2007, several members of Bob's staff as well as the election staff really looked at the database, how it functions, how it interacts with the counties, how counties interact with our system. I'll be honest, it took a little while to really kind of get a feel for how that happens. In early 2008 or late 2007, we invited counties to come to Columbus that shared the same voter registration vendor and to get their input on what are some of the improvements you'd like to see from your end and your perspective. And one of the things that we heard at that time was that the way that counties interact or view the information for verification of voter registration information is called a voter query system, and the counties log into that and they look using the voter query system to look up voters or confirm things or check for duplicates. And the good news is we were able to make several enhancements on how that's presented to a county and what type of features this voter query system has for counties. Another thing that we heard from counties at that time was the packets or the notices that are sent sometimes weren't always clear as to what the problem was. And obviously, if a county can't understand what it is they're not doing correctly or the system saying, hey, wait a minute, here's a problem, then we needed to fix that. And so we worked with the vendors to make sure that it was more standardized and that the packet or error message that went to counties and vendors was more clear so that it was possible to see, hopefully, what exactly the board needed to do in order to fix a duplicate or some sort of mismatch. The third thing that we did and we heard from counties is that the public wanted maybe a little bit more enhancement in terms of when they needed to look up themselves just to make sure that they were registered and in the statewide voter registration database. And so we worked with IT and some boards on enhancing that site on the Secretary of State's website so that if you registered or you turned in a change of address and you wanted to find out is it in that database, you had two options. You could go to that specific county's website, and if they provided that service, look it up on their website, or you could go to the Secretary of State's website and look that up and just confirm, yep, they've got my right address. Now, the other thing that we tried to do at our level was work with there are three basic voter registration vendors that service most of the Ohio counties. There are one or two that do their own voter registration system. But we tried to work with everyone to say, look, when you're entering this data in order to make sure apples are apples and oranges are oranges, here's some definitions of these fields. For example, we all need to agree that if it's 4121 North River Road, that 4121 is a numeric field and not an alpha field. Again, if you're putting in road, should it be RD, RD period, ROAD, things of that nature? That's not something that happens overnight at the county level with vendors, because as you can imagine, somebody's got to either A, go in manually and change all the ROADs to RD periods, or they've got to work with a vendor who says, well, we've got a program that can automatically standardize that for you, but by the way, it's going to be X amount of dollars. But again, a lot of counties have been moving towards that standardization. Why is that important? Well, again, for transparency, when you go to look up your address Or you may want to just put in your address. Do you list it as RD? Do you list it as ROAD? It gets confusing to someone who wants to just look up themselves. Now, again, there's other ways to look up yourself if you're with the public. The last piece of this puzzle is, having gone through a presidential election, having some additional issues raised, in about a month and a half, our office is repeating the process of inviting boards to come back and again tell us, hey, we liked X, Y, and Z, but we found out we need C, D, and F now. We need extra features. This didn't work as well as we thought, or this needs further enhancement, and so we're looking forward to that. And we will continue to work with the vendors as well as the counties, because as Bob touched on, the counties are the key with this process.
Thanks, David. And continuing on that theme where counties are key to the process, for more on the background, in 2003, 2004, when the state at the time went to this bottom-up system, which is really one of the few states in the country that actually has this kind of system. Most of the states are a top-down system where all the counties are using the exact same kind of software. What we did in Ohio, from an elections official standpoint, local folks, we were very concerned because when everyone thinks of a statewide voter registration database, they're just thinking about the data of just registered voters. But boards of elections use their local voter registration systems for much more than just voter registration tracking. It's the system that we use to track poll workers and assign poll workers, to do precinct boundaries, to track assets in some case in polling places, to issue absentee ballots. So to abandon those systems locally would have caused really significant problems, and the bids that came back from the vendors to create a state system were just astronomical. So that was kind of part of the reason that we went with this bottom-up system. And I think the current secretary has really inherited a system that was not a primary focus of the previous administration. And I think there are a lot of opportunities to improve the system that we have, to make it usable and to reduce a lot of the frustrations that counties have with the system interacting with each other. We have this database, but in order to eliminate a duplicate or to determine if a duplicate even exists between two counties, you would think that we have this great database, but it ends up being a very manual, paper-intensive process where counties print out reports, mark them up, and fax them back and forth to each other to say, well, you keep this one, I'm going to keep this one, or delete the. It's a very archaic process, paper-based, manual, lots of possibilities for human error for a system that I think was intended to be a lot more technologically advanced. So I'm hopeful, and I think the Secretary of State's office has indicated an intent to focus a lot more energy on this issue than has been focused in the past, now that we've identified a lot of the areas of frustration for all of us.
All right. Well, our first item is talking about the state responsibility for list maintenance. And in it, we recognize the current status where the counties have responsibilities on processing duplicates. And Matt has mentioned how that can be an onerous feature when not only because of the number of duplicates that might be identified, which may in the end not be a duplicate at all, it's just kind of flags that go up that they have to check. And the challenge is you're working with another county, and although one county's ready to go to work on managing that list of duplicates, they have to have the other county's availability, interest, and support to have that discussion and sort out the issues. There were suggestions in the December conference as to whether there's a role for the Secretary of State's office to address that issue in terms of doing duplicates. We heard from panel member Bob Mangan saying in virtually all cases, those changes and adjustments to the database, whether you're merging two into one, or you're deleting one, or you're recognizing it no longer has a flag that needs to be related, they are two separate people, that is handled at the county level. Some are raising, should that be at the state level? Or what can the state do in revising the database structure to make it more user-friendly for the counties who have that process that they need to conduct? I think we can begin to see from the audience what comments or questions you have, and if you can begin orderly going to the microphone, we'll open it up to the group. And if you can give us your name or the organization you're with, if that's just helpful, again, for us to know the context of the issue or how we can follow up with you as well afterwards.
Sure. My name is Linda Lally. I am the president of the League of Women Voters for the state of Ohio. But I am also, in my other life, a financial person. I'm a former certified public accountant. And so I take a great interest in the financial cost of the database challenges. At the risk of hijacking your questions, Tom, I wonder if we could just revisit one of the basic premises that the database has to remain in the control of the local, of the counties. You know, for people who work with database management, database analysis, there is a high cost, a very high cost, of all the reconciliations necessary to maintain, in effect, I would say 89 databases, 88 plus the statewide. Matt referred to the, I think you said astronomical or enormous. Could you elaborate a little bit upon that? You know, exactly how, is it so astronomical that we shouldn't start from ground zero and talk about perhaps it should be a top-down database as in other states?
Well, if memory serves from several years ago, I think the low, and I wasn't a part of the evaluation team, if Jeff Matthews is in the room, I think he might have been as president of the association at the time. But I think, if I recall correctly, that the low bid for developing a statewide top-to-bottom system that would have encompassed all the different aspects of elections management that boards of elections need, that the low bid was $25 million. And that the state, most of the counties already had systems that they were very happy with for all of those other very important election management aspects, and that the cost of upgrading the counties like Franklin that needed to upgrade because our vendor at the time wouldn't support the transition was far less to enhance the local counties than doing a huge statewide system. I also think it's important as a part of this conversation to really break out the two different things that we're talking about, because we're talking about election management systems, which is what boards of elections need. As a part of that is local voter registration database management. And then the second piece, which is the upload of just the voter registration portion to the state for purposes of combining the data that then gets sent over to BMV, et cetera, and then is made available back to boards of elections through the online lookup or the email, the packets. And Bob and Dave can probably speak more to that than I can, but I think it's important to divide those two conversations as a part of this, because we can, you know, blow up what we have and create a really great state database, but really leave the local boards of elections without the tools we need to efficiently run an election.
I'm gonna also go back in time to when I was on a board of elections in Clark County, and Matt's absolutely right. I remember at the time, my fellow board members and I, very concerned about the fact that we had a staff that was very familiar with their current voter registration system and would have to be, frankly, learn a whole new system. We were very worried about what would happen to the integrity of that data. And so when the state finally basically said, okay, look, you have a choice. You need to interview different companies to see who you think can do the job for you in that county. We leapt at the chance, and we picked who we felt was best, and they were offering us the ability to keep our current database intact, but add enhancements, and have us be able then to tie in with the state's brand new database at that time that was being created. And so we ended up at the time feeling like, wow, this is the best of both worlds. Now, over time, I think it's healthy to revisit that. And again, that's part of what today we're here to talk about, and obviously why we're hosting some additional meetings with the counties and the vendors for the future. You know, one of the themes over and over again today is there's no perfect system. One of the advantages to boards being able to maintain the integrity of that existing voter registration data and having diversity among different counties is that, once again, it would be awful hard for systematic purges to be done. And that has made the news in other states with the top-down model. In other words, the state decides these folks need not be eligible to vote anymore, they're gone. That would be virtually impossible on a statewide basis in Ohio. So that's an advantage that some would argue, hey, that's a good thing. The flip side to that is, if we need to do a fix, or as Bob mentioned, we just even want to change a header for a column from dead to deceased, we can't do that system-wide, statewide. We have to work with each of the vendors in each of the counties. So some would argue the same thing that makes it a good thing, now that's a bad thing. And those might not be the best examples, but I think you're seeing where I'm coming from. Again, there's advantages and disadvantages whichever way you go. And once again, there may not be this ultimate perfect system.
I would add that as part of the development team at the time, there were other issues that came into play. The $25 million figure is about accurate, as Matt noted, but that was based on going out and bidding and talking to vendors who, of course, had an interest in this. Civil servants who worked on the project up to this point in time had decided that we could do this in-house and push out these systems and include those things that dealt with poll workers, et cetera, meet the county's needs as well as meet what we thought, or at the time was interpreted what HAVA was asking us to do, which was to provide a centralized statewide voter registration database that could be accessed from any point. At that point in time, there were actually issues, as David and Matt have noted, that county concerns, if you will, at the local level, as well as a great deal of concerns by vendors who felt that they would be losing business. Thus, the decision was made to go with private sector development in this area. And that's what's got us into sort of this position now. You can imagine how databases interact. You got a local database, you got vendor involvement, you got state, Secretary of State involvement, you got BMV involvement, SSA involvement. We all know that data in, dirty out, all those types of things. We're all aware of data entry issues, typos if you want to have it. The resistance to double entry that would have prevented some of these typos. A lot of basic methodology was in place. Processes and functionality were available at the time, but the decision was made to go in this format, and for valid reasons, one could argue. But the cost factor was highly inflated, in my opinion.
I recalled reading a report on Washington State back in 2005 when they developed their statewide voter database, and they talked about the extremely high costs that other states had encountered in developing their top-down statewide system. And Washington State, which used a variety of Microsoft products, given their hometown in the state of Washington, and had done it at perhaps $6 million for them, but understanding it's a much smaller state than Ohio, and it may not have had the same type of dynamics in terms of the local board of elections and how they had tie-ins to run their poll books, absentee ballots, and a lot of their other work that they have to do on the very same systems that are tied in through their vendors. I will acknowledge that the Secretary of State's office has rebuilt up its IT staff in terms of numbers so that it can address issues as come up in terms of enhancements, and whether that's enhancements in the future for our campaign finance reporting system or for this statewide voter registration database. Our tendency is to look in-house, see what we can do versus looking outside to outside consultants. That helps us on the monetary figure, and it's a matter of focus, and we are very focused on this issue. Our next speaker.
Norman Robbins, from formerly Voter Coalition. Could you all discuss the pros and cons of using the statewide database, which has to talk to the county databases, right? It gets the information from them, and therefore is sort of the Ohio national language for voter registration and so on. Would you discuss the pros and cons of using that for duplicate checking and why that wouldn't be the best and save a lot of time? It could be perhaps automated and then the information go back to the counties so they could be sure nothing was done, you know, but why not do that at the state level if we have a state database that talks to the county databases? What are the pros and cons? I'd like both the election officials and the experts on database to discuss that.
Well, I'm one of the probably handful of people that personally thinks we just ought to blow up the whole way we do voter registration and move away from voter-initiated, paper-based, manual systems to something else. I also think that having a completely decentralized voter registration process where all the 88 counties are doing it by themselves really stifles innovation because there's no economies of scale by the state to try to figure out how to do this more efficiently. So you have Franklin County dealing with 300,000 voter registration cards last year, and Pickaway County, you know, dealing with 25 or 30 or 50,000 cards, and we're all doing it on our own by ourselves, coming up with our own local innovation that's funded locally instead of this. So my view is I think the state should take it over, and I think there's a way to do some automation between BMV and that whole process. But I think, Dr. Ramos, I think that there are lots of other things that we can do for data validation that I don't think that we're currently doing. I think a lot of it has to do with economics, frankly. But I think there's lots of other government databases that we can use to independently verify data that we have. The other thing that our office does, I think most boards do, is have implemented a process of verifying each registration record. One person does the data entry, another person reviews that information. That reduces a lot of typos. Obviously, still a lot of them get through, particularly when you're dealing in presidential elections when large percentages are coming at one time. In Franklin County, we had about 20% of our total registration activity for the entire year come during the month of September. And so even when you have two sets of eyes check those registration records, you're still going to have mistakes. So I think there are opportunities for validation, and I think we need to explore them.
That's a very good question, and it's one of those that I have pondered a couple of times, and I, again, by no means am the ultimate expert here, but just a couple of observations in terms of pros and cons with duplicates. The system is designed, and any system should be designed, that if certain key information is the same, for example, a first name and a last name and, let's say, a date of birth, and again, we can have further conversation about this, but as an example, those three things match up, that could be a duplicate. In other words, it might be the same person because same first name, last name, and date of birth. So now the question becomes, on the one hand, one of the advantages is when you have the bottom-up system is that obviously each county that has this registration, County A and County B, where it's a potentially same person that's registered in both counties, have to do some legwork. And they have the opportunity to drill down and question and look at other things to really determine, is this really the same voter? That, on one hand, is a good thing. Flip side is, that's also a bad thing, because as Matt points out, that's incredibly time-consuming. It's laborious. It requires, even if one county has the time and the staff to call the other county, that doesn't mean that county has the time and staff right on that exact day to get this done. So there's a pro and a con there on requiring this to be a county-driven verification or looking at duplicates. If it was done at the state level, one could argue, well, is there a way to automate this so that if it's certain criteria, and again, using the same example, the same first name, the same last name, and the same date of birth, that the state just automatically looks at the two dates the people turned in some registration information and automatically says, oh, well, we're going to take the most recent one, problem solved. That would be a nice thing because it would save time, but a critic could say, now, wait a minute, not so fast. We're talking about a person's right to vote. Is it possible somebody had the first name, last name, and same date of birth, and you just threw someone off the voter rolls? So I don't claim to have all the answers, but the question was, could you talk about a few of the pros and cons? And there's probably others that would have even more pros and cons, no matter which system you went with.
I'll agree with pretty much what Dave said, that doing it on a state level, you know, we get so much information comes over to BMV from Secretary of State, and when you're matching even name, last name, date of birth, you're talking somebody puts first name, middle initial, last name on a registration, the BMV has them first name, last name, match, mismatch. So there's so many of them at a statewide level that it wouldn't be as accurate to do it statewide, because we would be saying, okay, this is the most recent one, throw it out. So you have to balance your accuracy with the time consumed, the time it takes to pass it down to the county and say, hey, go figure this out, talk to the other county and do your duplicate. And when you're talking about the right to vote, it is a fundamental right that perhaps, you know, when you're doing your cost benefit, you have to take that into account and take the extra measures on the county level.
By the way, just to jump in, also it's probably occurred to some of you, but what about a hybrid? What if the state were the one that detected the dupe and you send it back to the county and they still investigate? Well, some would say, well, gee, you've just defeated the purpose of making it easier and less time consuming. Others would say, no, that makes sense. At least the state has the uniformity and counties still would have to do it. I just wanted to throw that in as another option.
I would just add that with today's technology, these things could be automated, but the very questions that the other three panelists are bringing up would force you to address that automation in a fashion that handled these types of issues. Again, I'd like to go back to the fact that what is put into the system is what all of this functionality would process against. And if you have typos or first name, middle name, last name, or first name, then a letter, all of these things, whether it's address and how they're put into the system, would have to be formatted in such a way that the standards were accepted by everybody before this automated functionality could even come to any level of ensuring that duplicates were not automatically cast off because of some dirty data that came into the process.
As we get ready for the next comment or question, I have one process issue. Do we have a list that's being distributed? I guess we do, where you can sign in your name and email. What our intention there is for those who are interested to kind of follow up on the issues, we'll have this list and know to send information to you on this topic, and also invite your continued participation even beyond the date of this conference on ideas and suggestions that you have. So make sure before you leave, if you have an interest to be signed up on the list, please do so. See me at the front if for some reason it hasn't gotten around to your table. Please go ahead.
I'm Robbie from Geauga County. Couple things concern me about addresses. The BMV has stated that they don't care if an address is accurate or not. They don't care if the number matches. They don't care if even it is an existing road. I think if the Secretary of State were to just take that information, we could open up big problems. We also have anomalies in our street list where, you know, some people, we have a large Amish contingent, and they may use the name Jug Road, and it's actually Nash Road. We know those things. They're anomalies. And we know that that is a voter. We can go into the auditor's site and see that it is an address. Those are two things that would concern me about going with a top-down system. Thank you.
That was exactly some of the reasons that we chose in the prior administration when HAVA was being developed to work with a bottom-up system. It is the local BOE members who will know these little idiosyncrasies that may exist at the county level. They're most likely to know, in this case, as she explained, the difference in the roads, for example. And so therein lies the issue with centralizing the database and allowing, at the state level, these types of decisions to be made. If we were a centralized system right now, that individual would be prevented from registering to vote.
Yeah, I'll just clarify. It's not that the Bureau doesn't care what a person's address is. It is in code that we are supposed to be notified of changes of address, but you're right, a lot of times people don't update their addresses with the Bureau, so mismatches can take place there. Also, if we do receive, I mean, we can't go out and track everybody, but when we get information about a bad address or an address that doesn't exist, I can say that those things have been tracked and people have been, had license suspended, vehicle registrations canceled, for giving us fraudulent information in terms of addresses, and because there's obviously taxing issues that we have there on the other side. So it's not necessarily that we don't care, it's just that we can't track everybody, but we do want the accurate information, but it is a good source of mismatch when we don't know when people move and people forget to update their addresses. So it is another good reason to look at it from the bottom up.
And part of it, I think, is the two unique missions of the two different agencies. Elections are very much tied to a fixed geographical point where the person lives based on the different taxing districts that they have and their opportunities to vote on different contests, whereas BMV, there's lots of other opportunities for people to use other addresses other than just their residential address in certain circumstances.
Cheryl from Jackson County Board of Elections.
I wanted to say something, if that's okay. I apologize.
It's okay.
I just wanted to touch on, I think everyone's had a good point. One of the things that occurred to me is that I could envision a scenario. This just, again, I'm not an expert, but I hope this makes common sense, and that is I could envision somebody moving a couple months before the election, 3-4 months, and they want to update that voter registration because they know, I really need to get that in the system. I want to make sure my vote counts. And so they fill out that voter registration update, that VR form, and they turn it in. And I hope I'm not getting my relatives in trouble, but I've got 3 or 4 relatives that would probably do that, but wait until their driver's license expired before they went and changed it. I hope you guys don't come after my family, but I mean, the reality is it costs money to go down to the BMV and get that license change. And they're thinking, what harm does it do? And so one of the things we need to be aware of is, I think it is helpful anytime a board can cross-reference with other databases to ensure the accuracy. But my experience as being a board member is most people really will change that VR address if they're interested in voting and may not get around to changing some of their other addresses. So it's not that we shouldn't cross-reference, it's just we need to be mindful of that and not make a mismatch the sole grounds to say, uh-oh, obviously we should suspect this person or worse, automatically disqualify them from voting. And I think there's a middle ground there. And I think that the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, of which we've been working with, realizes that and in no way holds their database as the gold standard. I think it's a good tool. I think that boards, and we're going to work with boards to improve
what they can receive and have as a tool, but we also need to be mindful that it shouldn't be a gold standard just based on, in my mind, common sense and knowing what could or may not be in the Bureau of Motor Vehicles database. And I'm not picking on them. There's other databases. And a good board, you know, they'll double check a few things, even a phone book to see if they can get some kind of verification. Thanks.
I think that it would be, I love my Bureau of Motor Vehicles because they're always very cooperative. And I am excited that they go to the lengths that they do to get people registered. They're actively working to make new registrations. I also, though, would like to see in their system some kind of a check that says these people are registered voters. Just ask them if they've changed their address since the last time they were in here. And then they could send us a new registration form for them instead of us getting somebody who comes in. They've never voted. They have no intention of voting, but we get 5 new registrations from the motor vehicles department because they've come in and registered 5 new vehicles that they trade every now and then. It would take a lot of paperwork and a lot of time off of our hands having to go back through because each one of those that comes in, we have to pull them up and we have to look at them and, you know, most of the time they're duplicates when they come in like that. It would make our life a lot simpler.
I'm sorry, where are you from?
Jackson.
Board of Elections?
Yes.
Okay. So I just want to clarify. So when we're thinking of ideas back to the BMV, when a person comes in to one of the local deputy registrars, just verifying with them that this is your current address?
Or? Well, just ask them if, you know, instead of doing a new registration, because there are people that every time you ask them if they want to register to vote, then they say, yes, I would like to. Okay. Instead of saying, no, I'm already registered.
So you're picturing a checkbox, this person's
yes.
already registered. Okay.
And I'd like to just suggest for purposes of brainstorming that we even go a step beyond that. It doesn't seem to make any sense to me, as I think about it, as a taxpayer, that we pay one government agency to already do the data entry to complete a voter registration form and then mail the form to another government agency that pays another public employee to enter the exact same data again. Why don't we have that data? And this, if I recall, this was inserted into state law a couple years ago to allow this process to take place, but it hasn't quite yet happened, to allow that data that BMV's already entered into their system to come over to the local Board of Elections electronically with the original card, with the original signature, so the Boards of Elections can avoid having to do all that data entry. My guess is that most counties are similar to Franklin in that a very large percentage of the registration forms they get every year, and especially in presidential years, are from BMVs. If you can cut out 20% or 30% data entry, and you're just matching up cards, scanning them into your system, with data that you've already received, I think that would be a tremendous savings and not, in my view, a significant cost in terms of developing that kind of system.
Right. If I could just respond to that real quick. I agree. I think it would be helpful if we could better share information with a lot of the local boards of elections between our deputy registrars. There are issues there that you also have to remember that one, because the BMV does have all this information and people are coming back and forth, it's not just the local boards of elections that look to share information with us or look to have us add check boxes to things. We have requests from Veterans Services, we have requests from all sorts of state agencies saying, hey, we know you get this information, can you input it, can you send it to us, can you track this information for us? So, I mean, these are obviously ideas that I'll take back and I will discuss, but it's helpful to keep in mind that these requests come from every agency you can imagine of our information. And also in terms of checking our information, once something goes into a BMV database, you have to remember it becomes protected by the Driver's Privacy Protection Act, which I'm not gonna go into big legal things with you. But once we enter the information, once it's part of a person's driving record, which it is, once it goes into our databases, there are a lot of protocols, there are a lot of protections that surround that person's personal information, which makes it a little bit more complicated for us to just give information to county boards of elections or to give information to an agency or private entity that may need it, that's when you get into a whole lot of legal issues with contracts and MOUs. So there are options, but there are a lot of background complications to it, I think, that people don't always realize are there.
And I agree with that. And I would just say that I think the difference that separates boards of elections from veteran services and others is that BMV has a federal role in providing voter registration services. So I think anything we can do to streamline that government process, those other things, those other valid barriers and complications are things that would have to be worked through. And obviously it can't, you know, it's not a snap the fingers and make it happen, but I think there's a way for two agencies that do have similar statutory obligations to work together more efficiently for the taxpayer.
I agree, we have Ben.
I wanted to ask Matt, David, and Bob all implied that there were opportunities out there that we could enhance some of the enhancements that have already been made over the last 2 years. There's been quite a bit of progress, I would think everybody would agree, but there's still a lot of nagging things out there. Could you elaborate on what you think those opportunities are and where we might be heading? Doesn't sound like we're going to be blowing up the system anytime soon with billions of dollars to fix it, so we're going to have to do the best we can with what we have. And second, I wanted to ask Bob, is there some sort of a magic number that in a perfect world, if we were doing everything right with a database, what percentage of a database is always going to be sort of in flux? I mean, is there some sort of a magic number that you guys that do databases kind of kick around that it's never going to be any better than a certain percentage?
No, there really isn't. Because as I said earlier, databases operate on the data that's supplied to them. And the database doesn't care what the information is as long as it meets certain validations and checks that are part of the process itself. If you have a system where, in our case, you have multiple databases in communication as well as private sector companies that perform a role with the vendors, you can just imagine. We've all heard stories of the person who isn't really dead, but SSA says they're deceased, for example. Government databases as well as private sector databases are just as good as the data that's applied to them. So there really isn't a magic number, although we strive for a level of accuracy. But in our case, with the bottom-up system, it really relies on the county doing the work that needs to be done at this current time. Whether or not suggestions that come out of this summit are applied in a new environment that would be built, we'd still be faced with the issues of the data is the data is the data. If it's dirty, it's dirty. And if you can't apply certain validations and checks across the board and enforce a standard, whether it's coming from a vendor or a county data processing shop, then it's only as clean as what's being put into it. As far as enhancements, or the question of what we can do now, there are a number of things that could be done now. My concern in this area really is the cost of making those changes, which would have to be a policy decision. We're involved right now with the EAC grant fund in which we're collecting 6 precinct level questions. Just to do that, we had to contract with the 3 vendors that are associated with voter registration over $300,000. Now, it's true that there are a number of questions that have to be answered from the precinct level, but it's only 6 questions. And we know that there are 11,107 precincts in Ohio. The EAC is in the process of considering whether or not Congress will enact this type of information across the board. It, as for some of you, the BOEs here who deal with the Election Day survey for information, if they mandate, for example, that we request or that we provide that precinct level voter registration and elections information, one can only can imagine the cost that may be enacted with that process. So as a technology service division within the Secretary of State's office, we just try to abide by the policies and the requests that are brought to us. And these these unmandated or unfunded mandates, if you will, that we are all talking about are a major issue because of how we're intertwined together at this level.
Some of the issues that I see the Secretary of State and office and counties needing to continue to look at, and again, it's not that it hasn't been looked at, but is the ongoing question of list maintenance, both at the county level as well as with the Secretary of State's office, you know, those procedures for how you maintain lists, processing duplicates, for example. We do have a system manual that counties have. It is available. Those are things that we continue to ask counties. Does the process make sense? Is there something we're missing? Is this not working? Another thing is, you know, vendors and their role and how to improve communications between our office and the vendors as well as vendors and their counties. Quality control, we're back to Bob and, you know, dirty data in, dirty data out. How can we improve or encourage boards to improve, you know, the quality on the front end? Things that we, you know, improving the features for the voter query system so that when counties need to look up a specific voter or voter history, how can we continue to make their job easier and more effective? Same with our public website. How can we make that easier if the public, a person needs to look up something to see if they're registered? Working with the Bureau of Motor Vehicles on how they are processing the voter registration information that comes over to them and how they're sending back a notification to our office and how our office is then passing that to boards. Is there a way to clarify that, make it better? Also keeping in mind, how do we protect voters? Again, I bring that up, that we need to be careful because that is a fundamental right to vote, and we have to make sure that what seems like a good idea doesn't end up accidentally disenfranchising or put someone on some sort of a list that makes them a target. And lastly, cost, which you've heard probably in every session. That's another issue that I think our office needs to look at, work with counties. Is there a better way to, you know, do this so that costs could be reduced? So that's my short list. Thanks.
Thank you, David. I think there's, as I've kind of mentioned before, I think there's a lot of opportunities for enhancement. Some are bigger concepts than others. I think that it's very likely that Congress is going to give us the opportunity to blow this up anyway. And we'll know more about that as things move forward. I think the two things I would just mention that I think are real opportunities for enhancement now in the current system that we have in the current processes is the first is to streamline that cross-county matching process. To give kind of a picture of the way it works for boards of elections, and David has mentioned it, where you know, one county may have time to do it, and the other county might not. In our office, we have essentially the same number of full-time people doing voter registration now that we had in 2004 before the statewide system. But half of those people now are focused almost exclusively just on the statewide voter registration database, doing those cross-county duplicates. And it's kind of like the mail for the folks that have postal service history. Every day you're going to get a new sack of mail, and even no matter how hard you work those duplicates, and you work really hard and a lot of overtime, and you go from 50,000 in one month down to 25,000 the next month, you're going to get that new packet from the Secretary of State, and you're going to be back up to 45 or 47,000. And so it's a never-ending process. Every time somebody registers, it essentially creates a duplicate between you and at least one other county. So I think streamlining that is very important. I think the other thing that has to be addressed is giving counties greater and more flexible access to the system to determine BMV matches. Right now, our only access to that system is essentially a one voter at a time query, and it's very frustrating for us. Last year, as we were, had a very high number of folks requesting to vote absentee, that the information that we had in our voter registration database didn't necessarily match what they were providing us for their absentee ballot application. If we had had a way to query the statewide voter registration system to get a report, a list of everyone that had some kind of error on their date of birth or their social or their driver's license number. We could have eliminated a lot of the problems that a lot of people had in this county and others receiving absentee ballots last year. And I think there's been a lot of talk last year, and I think mentioned in passing this morning about making sure that information isn't used to target voters and to disenfranchise folks. And I wholeheartedly and completely agree with that. But I think boards of elections have to be given the tools and the flexibility to use that data in an effective manner. And I would say at this point, it's not an effective tool.
All right, and I want to remind folks who come to the microphone to please identify yourself. Thank you.
My name is Eleanor Spielman, and I'm General Counsel in Secretary of State Bruner's office. I wanted to make two real quick points. One is more in the nature of clarification. We've had some use of terms like dirty data in, dirty data out, and I just wanted to make sure that everybody understands, and Bob, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that we're talking about dirty data in the sense of typos and so on and so forth, and in no way should that be construed to mean that there isn't a real eligible voter attached to that, quote, dirty data. The second point I wanted to make is to bring everybody's attention on the bigger picture of the fact that there are other safeguards that take place in the election process to make sure that eligible voters and only eligible voters are allowed to vote. And I would point specifically to the voter ID laws, which allow people to provide updated information even if their driver's license is not showing the address that's on the voter registration poll books and so on and so forth. So I want to make those two quick points.
And Eleanor, thanks for making that point. I would just add, I think from a local county perspective, having watched some of the statewide voter registrations queries, I think we need to, on the dirty data issue, make sure that we have full confidence that when things are being returned as matched or not matched, that it's really the case. We had an issue where we had, it was reported in the dispatch, created a fake voter for the purposes of testing systems in our office, AAA tester. Last name was AAA and last name was tester. That got uploaded into the system and came back as a BMV match. And so they're, making sure that we have confidence in that system is important as well.
Thank you, Matt. I'd like to remind the group we have about 15 minutes left. There were some other items also on the agenda that address the issue of, should there be some auditing features or other quality control procedures put into place? Also, just generally, other issues in terms of protecting the privacy of the information. Is it secure? Or any other suggestions you have of what are the enhancements that you'd like to see at the statewide voter registration database? So we're in a wide open session, which we've kind of been in most of this discussion, but remind you, for those who are interested to, again, present questions or comments, we're going to do that and finish up on time. Thank you.
Eleanor's point and Matt's point are valid ones, but it is evidence of the fact that we don't purge anybody out of these databases. As you heard Matt say, it went all the way from some test user all the way up to the BMV and came all the way back down and was actually apparently confirmed as a matching voter. There's some type of misunderstanding, and thank you, Eleanor, for pointing that out. When I say dirty data in, I'm not talking about eliminating any of that dirty data. SOS, again, does not modify or change any of the data provided to us. And when I say dirty data, I'm talking about typos and address problems, et cetera.
In other words, if someone's deceased, they remain on the database, but they're noted as deceased.
Well, I'd go so far as to say maybe there is somebody whose real legal name is Santa Claus, and they register to vote. Who are we to purge it or say, wait a minute, uh-uh. As you know, more and more people have creative names and monikers, and that's not our job to say no, that and reject that. So literally, if you're doing a test where you want to put in something really kooky, you could. But again, on election day, and this goes to where Eleanor's saying, Santa Claus better have a real name and a real signature, and it better match, you know. So there are other safeguards. In addition to that, boards, once they enter a voter registration, are supposed to send a notice, again, confirming, okay, this exists. And again, my point is we need to be careful that all of these are tools that boards have, and I agree with Matt, BMV is another tool. But again, no one piece of this giant puzzle should be the be-all, end-all.
And I'll just say that there actually is a Santa Claus. There was a case a while back with the BMV where this man wanted to change his name to Santa Claus with the BMV, and we eventually did let him do that.
I would add one more thing real quick. This is not in this area. I would like to point out that as of the last census, there are about 11.5 million Ohioans. Within our database now, we have over 9 million listed. Now, only 8.3 or 4 are active registered voters. That's a very high percentage of available voters in Ohio being registered. If you subtract a couple million for people under 18, et cetera, and for those kind of things, you're looking at a very high percentage of Ohioans who are actually registered or within the database itself.
Thank you for your patience.
I'm Beverly King. I'm a manager with the Montgomery County Board of Elections. So my perspective from an election official point of view, both an election official who has resolved duplicate list as well as assigned the list to other staff to complete, I'd like to see some enhancements from the vendors to the current tool that we have that we call duplicate list. What I'd like to see is one field that's universal to every county in Ohio that gives you the last voter-initiated activity date. And I think if you had that one field for every county with the same meaning and the same code, you should be able to look at the duplicate list without having your computer and be able to resolve it. Of each duplicate, often I have been walking through the office, received a call from another county asking about the duplicate list. And I said, hold on, let me get to a computer, I'll be able to help you. We should be able to look at that list, and for each county, it should contain the name, birth date, social security or driver's license number, and a universal voter-initiated activity. And I think that that would help us in the process because it takes a lot of time, effort, and energy. Yes, we are public servants. Yes, we take the voters' interest at heart, to the end. We do not want to disenfranchise any voter, but just that little tool enhancement of the current software would really be useful for us at the county level.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, my name is Mickey Smith. I'm with Butler County, and I want to say, for one, I have seen improvements to the statewide system, and I do appreciate that. But one of the biggest concerns we have is that coordinating that merge keep, that is such a hard thing to do with other counties. If we could independently somehow, agree keep and merge with each county, but to come up with some kind of function that when I merge or keep, they do it on their own independently. And also want to bring up, with the purge coming up and cleaning up the database, is there anything coming up soon from SOS on some updates on that procedure?
Yes. First off, again, let me just tell you, the word purge scares me because, as you just heard, nothing's ever really purged. It's just moved into inactive status. So I wanted to clarify that. Secondly, yes, there are instructions under that we're required to send out to boards that deal with from NVRA, National Voter Rights Act, Registration Act, I'm sorry, the NCOA, National Change of Address. Boards are required to look at a list of addresses that were provided by the Postal Service that the Postal Service has identified as being different than the address that the voter registration database has in it. So bottom line is the board gets a list of addresses that the Postal Service has said, we're not sure about this particular voter's address because it's different in our files, and there is a complete process that boards follow under the law. And so to get to right to your question, I would say before the end of the month, we will have the instructions out to boards the same as we did 2 years ago, because this happens every 2 years. If a board, since I know there's going to be some in the group that are wondering, okay, so what happens next? Well, the board sends a notice to these folks, and if the person responds affirmatively, then they're okay. On the other hand, if they don't respond or it comes back as undeliverable, they're not purged. They're put into kind of a confirmation pending status, which means on election day they may have a flag or an asterisk. But if that voter takes an affirmative act within two federal election cycles, their active voter status is restored. And I apologize, because some of you, that may be more than you want to know. And by the way, this is probably an 18-page directive that I've just boiled down into less than 1 minute. And if anyone wants to see a copy of the old one, it is online so that you can get a better feel for what I'm talking about. Or if you want to talk to me afterwards, I'm happy to. But hopefully that answered that question.
Good morning, Aaron Ackerman, Ohio Association of Election Officials. One real quick question regarding that pertains to both BMV and the Secretary of State's office. My understanding as far as dirty data is a lot of that comes into play as a result of clerical errors that are made, typos that are made in entering registrations into the system. And House Bill 119 from the 127th General Assembly allowed the Bureau of Motor Vehicles and the Secretary of State's office to come up with a format by which data could be moved from the BMV over into the local boards of elections databases electronically to accomplish two things. Number one, help the boards not have to spend so much time doing repetitive data entry for fields that have already been done when the person signed up for their driver's license. And then number two, eliminate, you know, another point of entry where clerical errors may occur. And I just wondered what the status of those discussions are.
Well, since the election, we have, the BMV and the Secretary's office have been working closely together to try to streamline our process to, when we get new registrations, streamline the process from sending the BMV new registrations to verify, to what we do within the BMV, what information we send back, who we send them to, what we send to SSA. Those are things that we have been working on since the election. We're still working out the issues right now, but we've had several meetings. We've had some good discussion and we're making some advancements on it. I'd be hesitant right now to say much more because we haven't hammered it out, but we're just continuing discussions and figuring out what our best options are. So they're all issues that we are considering and they're options that we're keeping open right now.
I would just add that the Voting Rights Institute section of our office is the one that is really spearheading this particular effort and working with the bureaus and motor vehicles, as well as several designated agencies such as local women and infant and children offices and libraries and things of that nature. And that I really can't go any further than that either, but again, Kelly Pinkleton, who's the director of VRI, is here at the conference, and I'm sure she would be more than happy just to talk about where they're at in that process.
I would add that David just mentioned the NCOA, which deals with address mismatches as compared with the Postal Service. If the BOEs will correct those addresses as they're going to be given the opportunity to, that's a cleanup of the data.
All right, and as we understand the National Change of Address, as Bob used the acronym, they give us a set to the Secretary of State's office, and through a vendor, we have the review of the database of those changes compared against the statewide voter registration database. Understand some people's postal addresses are post office boxes, and that is not the acceptable form of residence address for voter registration. But nonetheless, we identify what those differences are, and once we have received that list, it is divided up to the 88 counties and sent out to each county, done in odd number of years, as David says, and should be out in the near future to the counties. All right, do we have any other speakers?
Yes.
Fine, this may be our last one before we have to end our session.
Good morning. I am Danita Judge from Advancement Project, and I'd first like to say that I really appreciate this conversation, but I'd like to take it in somewhat a different direction in terms of no matches. We've talked about really, you know, the duplicate, but basically Ohio law does not provide for what happens when a voter is unmatched. Basically, we have a directive from the Secretary of State, but we all know the directives change with whoever happens to be in office at that time. And I'd like to know a couple. One, is there any consideration to pass any legislation or to draft any legislation that basically says really what should happen under Ohio law when a person is unmatched? We also know that that was the basis for considerable litigation right before the November general election. And we really believe certainly that a voter who is unmatched really should be added to the rolls, and that that unmatch is not a basis for a challenge, number two, and that that voter should also be required, or it should be able to cast a regular ballot. So I'd also like to know whether there's been any conversation with regards to that issue. Thank you.
Well, I think, Danita, because you and I have had conversations about this privately, my view is that a match or a non-match should not be grounds for canceling the voter's registration status or even from challenging that person. My view is that having the information, which we do not have at this point, unless we want to look them up one at a time, having that no-match information gives us the opportunity to go back to the voter to then verify information or to get the missing information to have. And again, our experiences in Franklin County, both with errors that resulted in matches because of typos in one or another government databases or other circumstances, in many cases deny the person the opportunity to have their absentee ballot. So I think as we have the conversation at matches, we have to be very careful to make sure that we do very clearly state that a no-match status does not take away the voter's opportunity to cast their ballot.
In regards to any pending legislation or if there's any kind of an effort for legislation, our legislative services folks would know better than I, but personally, I'm not aware of anything that would specifically.
I thank you for your attention and participation. For those who didn't sign the sheet who want to follow up on this, please see me in the front, and I wish you a good day.